The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle. This is the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Today is September 23rd, 2014, and we are sponsored by Fiorello Barbell Company here in upstate New York, where we're not the biggest, but we're the best. And our motto is, we don't try, we succeed. Today is a big day. As you know, we've had a lot of new people on this show, and the show is just progressing greater than I ever thought at this point. And before I get into introducing, well, I'm going to have, this is Steve Helmicki, who is going to be on the show, but I want to give you a little bit of background how I met Steve before we get into everything. When I went to Iceland in 2008, I tore my bicep. And Steve had been a contributor for quite a while to Milo magazine, which, if you don't know, that's Randy Strassen's magazine. He's been around forever, I believe since the early 90s it came out. And I liked the way Steve wrote, and I don't remember if it was something I read in there or something that he had talked about when he was, a power lifter, if I'm correct with that. Steve tore his bicep. And being that he was in the Buffalo area, you know, he was closer than anybody I knew that had had an injury like that. So I reached out to Steve, and Steve got back to me. He was very generous with his time, and he talked to me because we didn't know each other at all. And he helped me out a lot with my progression to get back, training, obviously, and we became friends. And, you know, I constructed this Hoosa steel stone, which we used to get ready for Iceland. And Steve had helped me out quite a bit, and I felt that would be a nice gift to him because I know he was very interested in the whole Husafell story, the saga. So Steve traveled quite a distance from Buffalo to come here one Sunday, and my good friend Alex built the stone, as he has with all three of them. So Steve is the middle child of the three, I guess I'll call it. And we had a great dinner here. We had a cigar and a bourbon, and Steve went on his way later that evening. So we've been in touch with each other over the years, and I've been wanting to get Steve on the show, but time constraints, as with everybody, we haven't been able to get there. But guess what? Now we are here, and we're hoping Steve's going to be a regular every week on the show, but we're not going to pressure him. Steve, I want to introduce him. This is Steve Helmicki. He is the president of Primordial Strength Incorporated. For those of you that do know of Steve, his site, one of the offshoots of the company is Primordial Strength Systems, okay? Steve, welcome to the show, man. It's been a long time, and I'm ecstatic that possibly you're going to be part of the show weekly. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself, because I don't know how many people in Motivation and Muscle have heard of you or haven't, but those who haven't, give us a little background on yourself.
Well, first of all, thank you for the opportunity to spend some time with you today, and I really appreciate it. As you know, I hesitate about talking about myself because in this business it's more about what you do for other people. That right. said, my competitive background, I was a competitive powerlifter for quite a few years. I was fortunate enough to total elite, have four world records that were submasters world records. I was in the top 20 in the country in squats in two different weight classes. And then in 2002, I won a national championship. And then in 2003, won a submaster world title in the IPA. I was also a USPF national referee, an AAU national referee, an APF national referee, and much of those federations are now dismantled. But I had some wonderful years from a competitive aspect. From the aspect of the business, in 2007, I incorporated Primordial Strength, Inc. and was fundamentally looking at rereading all the Russian studies, primarily Verkhoshansky, and then taking a look at interpreting it and building a strength training system. I had an opportunity to train some football players in 2007. We had a very different approach based on the variable method, decided to apply it and see what we could do athletically. That turned into about a 50,000-hour study that's now in a 1,200-page textbook. It's a certification system, so we're in 10 schools. The U.S. Marine Corps also uses our certification system, and it's a National Academy of Sports Medicine and Cooper's Institute teaching facility. Our base facility is in Elma, New York, and then we subsequently got into the design and development of equipment. I think hopefully that's a decent amount of the background from that perspective.
That's a pretty decent amount, you know, and we're just glad to have you here. We're going to talk about a lot of things, but today's subject is, Steve's written about this for years and he is definitely an expert on this. And we're going to talk about concussions. And if you pay attention, especially in the National Football League, this seems to be something that is just out of sight. You know, if you know Anthony, if you remember Troy Aikman with the Dallas Cowboys, the main reason he had to retire was because he was getting consecutive concussions. This wasn't just happening, you know, randomly. This guy was constantly having concussions, which caused him to obviously hang up his cleats. So, Steve, what got you in? I mean, obviously you have trained a lot of football players, but what got you into the concussion stuff? Was that before you started training the players, or did you start noticing patterns of this as you were getting more and more into the football end of things?
Well, I noticed some patterns, and at the beginning, I'll be honest, primarily it was the lack of neck training. And I, again, that's only a small percentage of the whole aspect of an anti-concussion system. But basically, because of liability, almost any of the professional gyms that you went into at that one point, not only were not doing any neck training, but there was a complete lack of any equipment available. So throughout that whole era when lawyers' liability really removed it, I stayed into it. And not so much the max effort aspects of it, but looking at, if you look at the body from a whole, from the feet up to the top of the head, what are the major weaknesses now from a collective strength training model that are leaving athletes at risk? So we knew right away that there's going to be some reduction in injury rates just off the neck training. So that I steep myself deeply in that. We have six machines on the floor completely differently, two by our own design, and used Randy's neck harness, and then got deeper and deeper into the neck training aspects, which I would say was the first baby step in entering the concussion market.
Well, yeah, and as you know from being down here, I've got the old-school Nautilus four-way neck. I've got Randy's harness. I do stuff with plates, you know, when I got against the forehead and the neck's off the bench, and et cetera, et cetera. I mean, the leagues, obviously, right down to high school level, you even look at Pop Warner, everything's gotten faster, and the blows seem to be delivered a lot harder. I don't know, maybe it's just we're more cognizant of this now, because I mean, if you look at, I love going back and watching old NFL games, and we're talking stuff when you had a guy in a field like a Dick Butkus. That guy could run through a friggin' brick wall with his head. What's happened? I mean, is it just that we're more cognizant of neck injury now, or are these guys hitting that much harder than they did, say, 25 years ago?
I think we're more cognizant of it. One of the things that we didn't speak about from a concussion standpoint is the Sports Legacy Institute's played an enormous role in bringing to the forefront, especially Dr. Cantu, the significant aspects of brain trauma. And I was fortunate enough to be one of the inaugural Sports Legacy Institute ambassadors. I think primarily it was just undiagnosed. I mean, we had much of what was said was, well, people got stingers, people, you know, got blurry vision for a minute. We put them back in, we toughened it up, we shaked it off. No one really looked at the permanency of it. And then very few people follow people post-play. So during the play, people have the capacity during their careers to slough it off. The NFL and you know, any other sports organization doesn't follow the people for 20 years after. And then you didn't realize the associative effects of the suicides and the depressions and the other things related to the loss of brain function.
Yep. How do you feel? All right, well, this is something I know. We'll see what you say here, because obviously you have massive traps. Now, one thing I love doing is obviously like a high shrug. A lot of people do regular shrugs, dumbbells, etc. Do you feel, and this is a pretty much, this isn't a loaded question either, if you're going to have a big neck, you're going to have big traps. So obviously that is hopefully going to be, so to speak, how would I put it? Well, it'd be the thing that's probably going to save your life. Do you feel there's a corresponding thing between neck and trap work?
Absolutely. But in this way, I think fundamentally the musculature has to develop a certain way. So in my opinion at this point, it's starting to look at the elasticity of tissue. So most of what's happened from a concussion standpoint right now is some change in rules, some change in equipment, some change in the diagnostics and what the procedure is to get people back on the field. But if you strip all the equipment away and all the rules and just look at the athlete stripped down completely, fundamentally, much of what's done even in strength and conditioning creates a lot of rigidity in the body. So in addition to all the strength training, you're really going to have to look at an elimination of muscle tension for enhanced movement. So when you start to look at the tissue quality, the type of tissue that's put on and how that tissue dissipates contact force is going to be really how people are forced to train athletes in the near future.
Well, when we're talking about tissue, though, okay, are we also talking about recovery? So would we be throwing in like a massage? Would we be, you know, I've had stuff with, I've had laser work done. I've had active release technique. Are these modalities you would mix in with a program, say, of, well, we're going to train the body as a whole, but let's just talk about neck and trap or just neck for this moment. Is that something you would also put into the mix?
Well, only when necessary. So everything you do puts traces on the central nervous system. So I'm a minimalist in that regard. My whole function as a strength coach is to try to break down the muscle cell walls just enough so that the satellite cells go to the type of tissue you want to develop without any spillover of the intracellular fluid, so that there's no aspects of delayed onset of muscle soreness. I think the more you can err on that side from an athletic standpoint, I'm not talking about a powerlifting, weightlifting, strongman standpoint, completely different modalities, but from an athletic standpoint, the more you can err on that side, the less of those modalities are necessary. The cleaner the tissue is, the more elastic the tissue is. Over time, it's going to show that there's less chance of an injury, not only from the neck and joint standpoint, but perhaps from a concussion standpoint.
Well, when you get, let's just say we've got an athlete. What if you as a trainer, obviously, and very much intuitive with this stuff? What's the earliest age an athlete, male or female, that you've ever worked with, you would start neck work on? Because remember, we do know that we use our neck every day in our life. It doesn't matter how old you are. But if we're going to talk about an athlete and someone coming to your place, what's the earliest you would seriously start any type of neck work with somebody?
With body weight work, and we've systematically developed this. So how we would start kids, we would still start adults out the same way. But as soon as they're involved in a contact sport, I think it's egregious not to start the subsequent neck work. And again, I'm not talking about neck machines and harnesses at that point. I'm talking about mobility aspects and strengthening it through body weight. But I think it's egregious the other way around. You could put the best helmet you want on an 8-year-old boy.
Exactly.
What's holding that helmet onto his head is what comes below it.
Absolutely. And, you know, at 8 years old, we don't want to see you wind up in a wheelchair, put it that way, you know, because you've broken your neck. If we were going to do, let's just say, let's talk about someone at our level too. We both, you know, you've power lifted. I've done all kinds of bizarre stuff, you know, with obviously dead stop work out of the rack. Everything I do is power rack training. So you can imagine when I'm coming up with a squat, the amount of pressure that's exerted on my neck. And plus, not only that, you know, with the stone lifting, you know what I'm doing. We don't have to get real deep in what I'm doing, but obviously, you know, I'm going back to Iceland next year. So I've already started the Husa steel. And, you know, as of last week, It was just below mid-shin. I hit 355 for five singles, okay?
Great.
Because I don't want it right on the floor right now because I don't need my lower back getting really banged up with all the other stuff I'm doing. So if you had me right now or you and I were working out together, and we, you and I have decades of training. We've been around. We know. Is there anything different you would do with me? You know that I use a four-way neck. You know that I'm very conscious of my neck. What would you do with an established athlete instead of an eight-year-old?
Well, then I start to mix the like, variable method stuff into it. So in two ways. So if you imagine the movement from an elastic tissue standpoint, so even from a harness or a four-way, five reps with two plates, immediately followed by five reps with three plates, immediately followed by five reps with four plates, and these are just an example of weights,
yeah.
Repeating that two or three times. I like rotational work a lot. So we've designed the first four-way and rotational neck. So I would do a lot of rotational work with you in that regard. Okay. The volume would certainly be higher because you can stand it. You're also doing something extreme, and I do like a lot of bridging work, so including head handstands. But, again, that's something that we're talking about from an extreme level of strongman, from an extreme level of strength training as opposed to the athletes.
Do you find, Steve, that, you know, and I know this I'm going to ask you the question because I know people who listen to this are going to be asking this. It's a very simple, straightforward, and you'd probably say, well, why ask it? What changes do you see? Okay, say we got a high school football player. He's used some weights, and we know in a lot of these weight rooms, you know, if you don't have good coaches, forget it. And he hasn't done a lot of neck work. And let's say we get him under your tutelage for, let's say, 8-9 months before he starts actual football practice in August. What is a kid like that going to expect to see? You know, he's already got some experience, but he's never worked out with a guy like you and a guy that has the experience with anti-concussion. What is he going to just notice from doing the network and whatever program you put him on, whether a full body, the squats, the deadlifts, et cetera? What is this kid going to be able to measure, if anything, right away? What's going to knock him off his feet pretty much?
From the neck perspective or the total body
perspective? Well, just everything. We're going to put him right in your school. We're going to dump him right in the middle of the fire.
Well, his lack of conditioning. So I would say that – unfortunately, and this is in my opinion, despite having a powerlifting background, much of the modalities for football right now are powerlifting based. So from a time sensitivity standpoint, they're slow grinding reps. So if you switch somebody from even somebody that can do 20 rep squats, and we could talk about the inefficiencies of the repetition method and the max effort method. But the bottom line is, once you start the variable method applications, even a guy that can squat, so let's just see a good high school football player that can squat 500 pounds. You start squatting him with 135 for two, 2 1/4 for two, 315 for two, 405 for two, and repeating that cycle four or five times, he's immediately going to be gassed out. So he's going to notice that there's a huge amount of conditioning issues. So when I look at an athlete, it's structure of force. So how force is accumulated is how it's displayed. So despite somebody having even a very large squat, like an 800-pound squat, the time under tension, the time it takes to be able to do that, the recovery aspects of coming back, the applicability to a game that requires fast outbursts a lot starts to wane over time. So I look at it purely as how quickly can you demonstrate the strength? How much can you repeat that high level of demonstration? So if I have an athlete that can put out 90% of his power output over the entire four quarters, as opposed to somebody that might be a little bit stronger from a max effort standpoint, but that has enormous declines over that time. In the end, the 22 guys on the field that we have without any major misplays are going to be able to beat those people up. So the tissue's different.
Yep. Well, and that's the thing. It's like I like to watch high school games. My brother-in-law coaches. I love to watch them standing there in the fourth quarter. Are they bending over? Are they standing up ready to go? You know, and that's a big thing right there. If you, we just talked about powerlifting as far as how you would set them up. Say they're coming in and you had to get them conditioned. Do you think strongman, and I'm talking, you know, obvious strongman, this is how I'm going to put it to you. Obviously, we're always going to do the three forms of something, whether it's a deadlift, a squat, a press overhead. Some people like the bench. That's your call. But obviously, you know that we like Farmer's Walk, Stone Carrying, you know, you name it. You know, I can, you know, anything we're talking. Which translates over better to your style, you think?
Well, here's the thing. I like the Olympic lifts a lot. It's all speed of contraction based for me. So I would say that this is how I choose anything. The first funnel for me is risk to benefit ratio. Yep. So a lot of times in strength training, people want to have internal measurements to show that they've done well with football players, whether they lifted a heavier stone, they increased 50 pounds on their squat. I purely look at film for an athlete. Is he more aggressive, has the capacity to recover well, and is he better on the field? Is it clear by film? So when I select anything to do with an athlete, the first thing has to come in is safety. You get hurt playing football, you get hurt playing another sport, that's different. You get hurt during strength training, in my opinion, you should be near zero as possible with internal injury rates. So I select very intelligently. I shut people down quickly. I don't allow any misform in here because it doesn't benefit anybody, even though there might be a subtle argument for psychological benefits of overcoming something. In the long run, if an injury occurs over that, it's not worth the risk. So I like all the modalities, and I use it all. I just use it all on the variable method. So even a farmer's walk, and let's just say we had 100-pound implements, 150-pound implements, and 200-pound implements, we would take whatever yardage we were walking with the hundreds, repeat it with the 150s, repeat it with the 200s, start with the 100s again. So I consistently apply our adaptation of Verkhoshansky's variable method in everything I do because the conditioning level is completely different. It's even different on a blood sugar level from a diabetic standpoint in comparisons to aerobics, powerlifting, or any other general type of training.
You know what the thing is, too? I've talked to a lot of people, obviously, on the show lately, and we'll see what you think about this, obviously. Oh, by the way, too, the one thing I had forgotten. I love the yoke. I've been going like nuts with a yoke lately.
Love that.
I love you know what it is, Steve? You know, not to digress from anything here, but you know what one thing I like, and I I've been around enough lifters, and when I was a lot younger in my teens and even starting like at 10 years old, I can always remember the older guys, obviously after they beat you up a few times and, you know, scared the life out of you, because these guys are like men with beards and they're 18 years old and you're a 10-year-old kid. It's there's always something to having a heavy weight on your back, isn't there? I'm just talking from a standpoint is when I lift, I love the squat, obviously. That's my favorite exercise. I love that feeling when it's just kind of sitting on you and you're supporting it. Yes?
Oh, and I do too, personally. But the difference for me is I can divorce myself from stuff I like when I'm looking at what somebody needs. So if we look at that max effort strength, the problem is if we look at all different types of strength have positive, negative, or neutral impacts on each other. So we know right away that absolute strength or max effort has a negative impact on speed strength over time. So when you start to look at somebody pushing off the ground and you look at impulse force, starting strength, strength speed, explosive power, and absolute strength, and we can even get into more micro details, all of those strengths have positive and negative effects on each other. So it's much more complicated than deciding just we want to raise and put heavy weight on people's backs and raise one max effort, because now we're having other impacts on movement. And the problem with athletics is everything athletically is solved by movement. So anything that we do that inhibits movement, yes, we can add other stuff. We can add more mobility work. We can add more sprint work. But the more you add, you know, the more stress you're putting on the system. So I try to do things very narrowly. For me, my max effort as a football player would be the game day.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you get these kids in there, obviously they're all individuals. They're different. But from a standpoint, if you had, and I mean, you know, I know that we have more movements than this, but if you had to pick one movement, and we're talking weightlifting here, because I still think I love strongman, I love a lot of other modalities out there training, whether you're doing squat pull-ups, et cetera, you know, burpees, all this stuff. But I still like the barbell the best. If there was one movement with a barbell that you had to stick to, or maybe you do it, but what would you pick?
Clean and jerks in the variable method. So just,
there you go.
So it would be very simple. just let's say a kid that can clean and jerk 300 pounds for argument's sake. Mm-hmm. You know, bar set with 95, a bar set with 115, a bar set with 135, a bar set with 185, a bar set with 200. Have them repeat clean and jerks up that line and down that line mm-hmm. in as many complexes as they can until speed of the bar is lost. I've been doing this long enough, you know, so I have, you know, probably 60 or 70,000 hours into it. So speed of contraction, I can look at visually. People that like to use Tendo machines or any other measurement or any other app out there certainly can. But it's for me, it's based on how people move things.
Yeah, and you're sitting there watching them. This is all practical stuff that's going on right in front of your face.
Yes.
I'm sure there's more than one exercise, but is the clean and jerk, do the kids coming in that we'll just talk about the high school end, do they take to that, or is there other, obviously there's other exercises they're going to like, but is that the main core one they seem to gravitate to, or are there other movements they really excel at, you know, using your progressions?
Well, so you asked me what I would choose if it was one.
I would tell you that everything I
do in here changes on a daily basis. So as typical of what you see in even Division I and pro strength training rooms with stuff written on a washboard, it never happens here. Even if I do 35 appointments that day and there's five people on the floor at the same time, five completely different templates are being used, variable methods. So it's based on the day. I would say everybody squats three times a week here. Everybody pulls three times a week here. Everybody presses overhead three times a week here. I've almost completely eliminated the bench press unless somebody really has to do combine work. But we're not a combine place. I mean, I tell people that I do not train people to do combine tricks. I mean, we train to play. We train to fight. We train to do what we do. So the bench press to me, despite being a decent one over time, I have no interest in really overteaching that, because it's the thing that – it's funny. People whose shoulders, elbows, and wrists are falling apart will continue to bench press. But if their back hurts a tiny bit or anything else hurts on them, they won't want to squat. They won't want to pull. So I stay away from it.
Go ahead. And not only that, think about this. Most of the stuff you do in daily life, you're standing on your 2 feet.
Yes.
You know, and that's a very important thing to get out, because I think a lot of people don't get it. You know, you're talking football. You're not laying on your back unless somebody decks you. You know, you're standing up and you want to do whatever your assignment is. Here's a good thing here. You know, we talked about offline about your new machine. And I'm very interested in this because, you know, I know you've got Nautilus equipment. And the four-way, you know, when done properly, it's a fine, fine tool. I love getting in and doing that machine. And I also have, I think you probably remember, I haven't done much of it since, you know, the biceps healed. I've got one of their original trap machines, which I went back and looked it all over. And the reason why I bought the thing, which it was very hard to find, was I always loved Dick Butkus as a football player. I thought he was the epitome of football. I mean, you know, aggressive, brutal hitter. You know, I think he played the game the way I would have wanted it if I was at that level. But, and you know, once again, that's why I bought the trap machine.
So
but
we have that same unit. I use
it. Oh, you got it too. And that was, I haven't used it. I'd like to get back into it, but you can understand that does pivot on the bicep pretty hard. And I haven't gone back to try it, so I couldn't tell you. What did you do? I mean, obviously, you are a guy that knows necks, you know, been very involved with injuries and things of that nature, and obviously you coach an awful lot of kids with high school sports. What did you feel needed to be changed? Did you take Arthur's machine that you had on your floor and found things that you felt could be updated, say, you know, 40 years from when he did his? What got you into building your own equipment, especially with the neck machine now?
So there's a static aspect to that neck machine. And even though I love the Nautilus four-way, there's much that can be improved upon it. So the first thing I would tell you is the variable method added into it is wonderful. The fixed mm-hmm. aspects of the face pad are problematic with a lot of people going, and that's what started the neck injury liability against them over time. So roller pad is the first thing that we started to move to on a lot of machines. It allows a further range of motion. It allows better adjustment to the head. So that's one aspect of it. So you have to remember, even though I stayed in neck training and you and I perform some extreme stuff, it's different when we do with the general population. So we have to look at the backlash on the anti-concussion movement when neck training comes back in is it going to cause any subsequent injury to that joint? So you have to start to look at a machine then, not so much as from an extreme aspect about what we look at it, but if we're bringing somebody back and they have to use 2 pounds on a machine, does the machine function with a full range of motion? Is there a likelihood that most people that we train, in fact, it should be all people, fit into the machine properly and can use it properly? Yep. Nautilus was built on means, and although we have a lot of machinery in here, if you look at the average person, many people will fall above it and below it and don't fit particularly well into the machine. It was way ahead of its time, there's no doubt.
Yep. Well, this is my thing. You're right totally about the neck machines, because I know they removed it from the gym that I was in years ago. And I know I was looking. It was funny. One time there was a gym not too far from me, and it supposedly it was like they had a quarter of it for power lifters, but it was more of like a general gym. You know, people went in, did whatever they did, and left. So I had called one day, and I said, "You have a neck machine?" "Yes, we have a Nautilus." So it wasn't the first generation like you and I got, where you got the big chains going and all that, which I love. That's what always captured me. You know, forget about, I guess I never even thought about the quality of them at the time until you read about it. But you looked at the things, and they just looked savage to me, ugly, big, but you knew it was something you'd wanted. And so I go to this place, and I wanted to use the machine, and the guy says, "You can't use it." And I'm like, "Why?" And the same thing. It was like liability. I'm like, "Well, you know, you told me you had one. I could come out." You know what they were trying to do? They were trying to unload it. They were trying to sell the thing, and they wouldn't let anybody use it. And, you know, I had mine already. I had the blue one, and I was like, I know they had to soften them up because Nautilus was changing their gears, so to speak, where guys like you and I would like that first generation. You look at the other one, they changed the cams on them and all that. And I looked at the thing. I said, the thing looks like a little piece of junk to me. But it was like something that a regular person who wasn't interested in banging away on what we got could be fully functional for them. But at that point, those were even going bye-bye. So, you know, I know that who was it? What was the name of the company, Steve, that took over? Was it Arthur Jones' son?
Medec or something like that. Medec.
Well, that was the that was another incarnation, but it was the other. They were huge. They're still out there. I think they've been bought though years ago. I can't think of the name of the company. My God, they've been around forever. It'll come to me, but I know that they had to do this for legality and all that. So what was replacing that? What were people doing with their neck? Or were they at that point, had they just stopped?
They stopped.
You know,
they stopped.
They totally stopped.
Yeah. So it was, so from as deep as we're into it now, even from most people leaving PT or athletic training school, how we started getting into this farther was is because a lot of that's not being taught. They don't have the capacity. So now you have somebody with 15,000 hours of ability that's been doing that and stayed in it even though when people weren't supposed to. So the interesting thing about the world is legislation kicked it out and liability kicked it out. But the next legislation coming up for schools is now you're going to be mandated to have a neck – every school is soon going to be mandated to have a neck machine and mandated to do strength training for it. So it's amazing how those things come full circle. Fortunately for me, now that I've been in this position and we've had a series of articles published in Milo regarding a three-part series on a systematic approach to the anti-concussion movement – manufacturers have started to contact me about testing their neck machines. So now we have 6 or 7 different units on the floor that we are – 2 of those are will be primordial-based, and they'll be available on anticoncussion.com when that goes back up. But the bottom line is you have to take a look at all of these things. And when you have all of those different units in play, you can start to look at and see fundamentally for the baseline average athlete, the average person rehabbing, what is the best unit. And that's where we're at with it.
Well, all right, obviously you have a clear understanding here of the neck, all right? The stuff that you're testing, and, you know, I'm not looking for you to say anything bad about any of them, and that's not what I want here. Say you got 6 units right now you were talking about. We already know that yours is, I'm sure, the best out of all of them. I can say that. You don't have to.
Well, I would say what, that. Until you try every. Yeah, you know, you have to be careful about stuff like that. I'm making the best at what I have the capacity to make right here.
But let me ask you a question this. Do you see big differences in all the ones you're testing? I mean, are they laid out that much different, or are they very, very similar in build?
Well, they're late. Yeah, I see a huge difference. But part of that is that I've wanted to. I bought a lot of old stuff too. So I wanted the first generation Autos, another first generation chain driven machine that's very old, because I wanted to look at the evolution of neck machines. As far as what currently is out there, yeah, there's a big difference. There's two people that manufacture for me right now. I have two completely different units, and there's a big difference in a lot of aspects of it. So I'm still trying to build them heavy old school with more functionality. So we're using 4x4 steel on everything, even though some of the top people that build Division One weight rooms and pro weight rooms have moved to 2x2. We want whatever we make, even without logos, to show.
Yeah. You talk about strength. Holy cow. If we're going to get into neck work, like I'm home here, all right?
Yes.
Let's talk about the two differences. For the people that do own neck machines in their own residence or in their own gym like I do, and then the people that you are training at your establishment or anywhere for that matter, I already know kind of like what you're going to do. How many days a week would you tell somebody to neck train if they're not under your tutelage? Obviously I know how you're doing the varying of the rep schemes and everything. Would you keep that whole setup exactly like that? If I came to you and said, Steve, I got a neck machine at my house, you know, I'll pay you exactly whatever you want to design a program for me. Is that going to be very similar to what I would be doing if I was training at your gym exclusively?
Well, at the beginning of it, yes, because this is what I do with everybody, and it would probably frustrate a lot of people, including people like you and I. I would start you with the basic entry-level field manual, and all that's body weight and mobility at that point. Mm-hmm. So despite all the history that we've had, until I started practicing Sistema and looking at the elimination of muscle tension, I could not move my neck in a figure eight. So the movement aspects of being able to move your neck in a figure eight, that level of mobility, that level of doing isometric training following the mobility training and the elasticity training, and then starting to use resistance and moving yourself all the way back up. Even if you can use the stack on a neck machine, it warrants you to go backwards and start from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It also allows you to start to catch, if you log correctly, the potential for injuries in the neck joint. So you can always go backwards to go forward in that regard, and I think it's a smart thing to do. So to go through a first field manual of 8 weeks and then a second of 8 weeks, you have 16 weeks underneath your belt, 2 to 3 times a week, then go back to the machine and start using the machine in a variable method. You're going to be back up to the same weights very quickly, but you've broken everything down and the quality of tissue is going to be much better.
Better.
So despite being able to use the same amount for shrugs as I used to before and the same amount on the neck machine, the aspects of being able to move the tissue and the range of motion from my head is completely different than when I was subsequently tied in to just doing heavy weights.
Well, this is real interesting with the Sistema. I mean, we didn't really hit upon that, and I know we could do that for another show. But I've read enough articles about the tension you're holding in your body and everything. Why don't you elaborate a little bit about it? Obviously, you've just stated about neck work, trap work, how things have changed, and I know you've used this system. Just give us a little bit about that system, Steve.
So a lot of things that happen in strength and conditioning, there's a big difference between elasticity and flexibility, as we know. So I chase elasticity. There's a more permanency level to the tissue. So if you look at the tissue of a big cat when it's laying on its side in a rest position, it When it starts to run, the muscles peak and tense, and then it re-relaxes. A lot of thing we're doing with strength training is you can see the way people walk nowadays when they've got a little bit of tissue. You know, they walk like they're carrying suitcases. They carry a lot of tension in their body. The problem with that is if they're moving like that in flux in a sport, that level of tension throughout the body when struck is very catastrophic. So we know from a systemic standpoint, if the tissue is relaxed, we can dissipate the contact force of even a boxer's punch.
Yep.
So we have to start taking a look at that as two football players colliding. What state should that tissue be in? What state should the body be in? And then how does the breath training dissipate the contact force? I mean, if you ask most of your players when you're training football players, what do they do when the right's about to collide? Almost everybody holds their breath.
Absolutely.
That keeps all of that contact force inside the body. So we really have to look at what is the proper breath control upon contacting. How does that dissipate the contact force either into the individual or into the ground and keep it out of us as the primary hitter? That reduces not only the orthopedic injury aspects, but potentially a reduction in the brain damage.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very interesting because – how many times do you think about your breath when you're getting ready to get lit? You know, I mean, it's the same way when you're doing any type of weight training. How many people do you know, and I'm talking people who have been doing it for decades, still don't know how to breathe right?
Oh, no, and when you can't – I mean, this was the frustrating part of taking Systema for me when I started is I could hardly use my apps. I was just – they would tell me every day, you're the fastest and strongest person in here, and I could hardly access that and use it against these people. So I realized how I moved had more to do with the dissipation of contact force because my rigidity was actually getting me caught. My elasticity is a sense of freedom. So when you start going really through the process, and you have to look deep and be ready to divorce yourself for a lot of the things that you held on to from an ego standpoint. But once you do that, you realize, like, you know what? There's a person that you might look at and go, but they move that much better than you, and they're that much more efficient.
Yep.
So there's a big – there's a – precision is what you want to do in movement. So the more precise a football player can move rather than more just raw power, the more precision that they have – the better they are to elude contact force, the better are to be able to dissipate surprise contact force. And over the time, it's going to show that that reduces the amount of injury.
So, too, and being in that type of state, obviously you can dish it out a lot better, too, I would say.
Absolutely,
right?
Because, remember, a whip travels at the speed of sound.
Yep.
So elastic movements, you get that pseudo-elasticity of the whole chain coming in. That contact force, even from a strike standpoint, hits and penetrates not the entire body but spots where it internally stays in, and you can send that deeper and deeper and deeper. They're much more efficient, and you can recoil off of that and reset yourself so even if a subsequent shot is coming at you, you're prepared to dissipate that contact force. So it warrants taking a close look at the whatever can be adapted in Systema to playing contact sports, it really warrants it.
Well, here's something that we said before that I caught real good, and this will be interesting for everybody. You brought the word ego up.
Yes.
And I thought that was very interesting because to get rid of this tension, obviously, we are holding stuff in. And we do know, let's face it, the mental game is big, big with anything you do in your life, whether you're a football player, entrepreneur, whatever you want to talk about here. In your own life, because I've read stuff you've written, obviously, tell me about the ego and how that affects sport, or let's say just the everyday guy, like, you know, going to work 9 to 5 every day and want to be an athlete of some sort. Let's get into that a little bit, Steve.
So we'll look at the difference between the psychological and what's held in the body. So for me, my whole life, I always thought tension is a psychological issue purely, and that it really does not manifest itself in the tissue. Until I started deeply exploring how that inhibits movement, I realized that your psyche and any of that psychological tension is really manifested physically. So if you look at your average guy about to enter work, and anticipating the tension. He's holding his breath when he pushes on the brakes. He's in a hurry. He gets pissed off at the stoplight when somebody pulls out in front of him. He starts to yell and scream. His tension on how he holds the steering wheel increases and increases. All that subsequently starts to manifest itself deeper and deeper in the body. If it's not a if it's not, everybody carries tension. So if you don't eliminate it through breathing and eliminate it through movement work, fear and tension manifest themselves in the body, as we're taught all the time. People that the whole no fear thing, the no anxiety thing, is a complete line of BS. Everybody has it. Yep. The only people that don't have fear are in the nut house. So, so the bottom line is you have to look at a way of what's the best way to eliminate it. So for the average person, you think about, do you start holding your breath when you're about to write a check, when you're about to make a big transaction, when you're anticipating a big phone call, when you're anticipating conflict? So remember, your blood vessels and nerve endings are together. Once that cycle starts, you immediately start the flow of the stress chemicals. Tunnel vision starts. So you have a loss of vision, a loss of cognitive ability to think properly in an emergency situation. And the best way to start is once you catch yourself with a disruption of the breath pattern, is to restart it again immediately. There should be a consistent ebb and flow with the breathing and full cycles. Inhaling and exhaling. There should be no stoppage of that. Every time you stop that, and it's funny because people go to cleanses, people go to all other aspects, and overflooding themselves with water, and money of those things you can live with a lot longer than you can without breathing. So I don't know what it is, 2 minutes you can live without breathing. But think about how many times the average person in their day disrupts their breath cycle. It's enormous, and that's the first start. And then movement should happen in between breathing. So just say a body weight squat.
Yeah.
See, I'm going to inhale on the way down and exhale on the way up. If I start to descend and then start the inhale, the tension's already built in the musculature. If I start the inhale and let your body drop off the inhale, and then I start the exhale and rise off the breath and exhale, it's completely different. You can almost squat in perpetuity doing that. But once you change that and the movement happens and then you try to have the breathing catching up, the tension's built in, the lactic acid builds up, and then there is an inhibition in how you move.
Yeah. Well, I've done that before, like you were just stating, and what happens to me if my breathing disrupts like that is I almost stop the lift. If you've ever noticed, you'll come down, you go to spring up, and you almost have like a glitch. You know, you'll catch back up and pull, but you can tell that there has been a disruption when you've been doing something. And breathing, you know, if you look at any of the old timers, you know, breathing was one of the biggest things they talked about. Any of the big wrestlers, the catch wrestlers, anybody like that, it was always breathing, breathing. And I don't know why we got away from that. What do you think? I mean, is there an explanation why people suddenly didn't value their breath anymore?
Well, it's weird that it's not been taught, and even from a powerlifting standpoint, you know, we were so taught to hold our breath so often that you started doing that outside of the place, and you didn't realize how much tension that was causing you. So I understand taking advantage of the Valsalva and popping up out of the hole, but the bottom line is that level of intracranial pressure, that kind of tension, that amount, once you start to adopt that on a regular basis and you're carrying that out through the day, you're raising your blood pressure. You think about how many times when the blood pressure cuff is put on somebody in a doctor's office that they stop the breath cycle. It's automatically elevating all of those numbers for people. So if people were taught to breathe properly, how much of those people would subsequently be off medication?
Well, yeah, and not only that, you know, when anybody – I don't care who you are. You go to a doctor's office for anything, when you walk through the door, there's the word again, tension. Because, you know, I don't know if a lot of people have fear, obviously, because, you know, it seems like we've been taught to think the worst of anything and everything, which is a really bad way to be. You got to get rid of number one. But, you know, like you said, with the blood pressure cuff, all right, you've been driving 20 minutes, say, on the Northway or, you know, a big highway. You arrive in the doctor's office. You're already apprehensive. You go in there, and suddenly you got this reading that your blood pressure's blown through the roof. And you and I both know that a lot of times that's not true, and I've had it even with mine. Well, they take it 10 minutes later. It's okay. You've calmed down, all right? So the breathing aspect, like you said, not taught, but vital, vital, not only to your life, but any activity you get into. Why do you think people are having heart attacks every Monday morning? You know?
Well, exactly.
We're talking about right now, anticipation of going in somewhere you don't want to go, pretty much because we know studies show 95% of people hate their job, okay? They got to do it because they put themselves in that position or they don't know what else to do. And then, you know, secondly, like Steve said here, you know, you run into some a-hole that cut you off Or, you know, you go to get your cup of coffee and you're holding it, you turn around, somebody pops you, it goes all over your nice, clean, white shirt and tie. All right, now you're pissed off. You walk into work, you go to sit down, your boss comes over, calls you in the office and bitches you out about something. So right there, your day is set. Now, if you can't change it through breathing and mobility, well, you got the makings for, I think, big trouble bodily, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. It creates an enormous amount of rigidity. And so you should look at tension and conflict, even something as substantial as war, the way we're trained is you should be fighting and dealing with people that are aggressive like buttering toast for breakfast. It should be that smooth. You should be using just enough ability to dissipate or to dissuade them from continuing, and not any more, not any less. And when you start to carry yourself like that, there's not that huge spillover of all the stress chemicals. And when you can start to do that, you're much more measured. And so no matter how high the conflict escalates, you're still better off being calm in it and being able to manage without having to go crazy and berserk.
Well, here's something that now we're going to get into something I really want to ask you. And I know that you're into martial arts and things of that nature. Big, strong neck when you're out on the in the concrete jungle out there. And we know maybe it's just from all the media now, but it seems like the world is becoming more and more unkind. And we know from a fighting standpoint that usually when someone that's even thinking about looking you over or maybe he's got other ideas – a powerful neck, a big developed – all right, we don't have to talk about having a 23-inch neck, but you can see anybody that's done correct neck work and they stand out. What is your feeling on somebody like that? You know, I like to call walking strong, and I'm not talking about walking like, you know, you've got a stick through your spine, okay? I'm talking walking normally. You know, obviously if you're developed, that's even better. What does a neck out in the real world do for you, Steve?
Well, I think the functionality of the strength. I mean, even in practicing Sistema, I think that's something that's commented on quite a bit, to be able to have the capacity to not really have your neck as a vital weakness, which it is on a lot of people, makes an enormous difference. The exposure of the size of it in general, and from my experience I would say that might be something that people look at and gawk at for a minute. I don't know if that's necessarily an inhibition to starting a conflict with that person. I will say this much, though. It's a saving grace for the person that has the conflict started with them. So I'd say that from a guy that's unfortunately probably been attempted to be cold cocked like 200 times in my life and punched in the side of the head, I've never been put out because of it. And I think it's, you know, I mean, some of that level you can argue is toughness. I certainly wasn't into breathing at the time. It was purely that my neck was that stable and my traps are that stable and strong that it was able to take that kind of contact force. Maybe see some cobwebs, but certainly something that, you know, was, you know, probably the power of like being hit with a baseball bat did not put me out.
Right.
So I fully agree that it's a super important aspect of anybody that's doing that kind of martial arts combat training or purely from a street survival standpoint.
Yeah, I just think it's so beneficial. And I also think you see people with a large neck, if you're an athlete, okay? Other people, like you said, might stop and gawk because they're like, you know, where do you see a guy walking that street with a muscular 20-inch neck, all right? And obviously your neck was a lot bigger than that. You had a mighty large neck. But, you know, to me it's more than that. I really think that there's a big key to that. Not only that, we know the neck can save your life. How many people have been in car accidents? You know, just think about getting rear-ended. You know, how many people get whiplash? How many people end up having neck injuries? The neck is just something that, like breathing, now obviously you're talking things have to be mandated, but it's too bad it's got to come to that where things have to be mandated when common sense should prevail.
Well, it's unfortunate. I mean, look, we're a reactionary society, so very little is done from a prevention standpoint, no matter how scientifically valid it is. The people that control what's being – it's a big pushback between the liability community and the medical community, and sometimes both of those entities are not the best to be making decisions. And anybody that follows underneath those groups waits – for it to be spilled from the top to bottom down. I personally would take the responsibility immediately, even if it was going to take 5 years to get it implemented. Look how many kids now are still passing through the system, and people can argue, well, we just weren't mandated to do it yet, so we don't do it yet. I think you're being egregious with somebody's child. How can you make that decision?
Yep. Those are careless things that could end up, you know, putting a kid down, not literally. Well, I'm sure that they've died from injury like that, you know, with the head injury too. But, I mean, like I said prior to all this, who wants to see any athlete or any person for that matter, you know, they can't move anymore. They can't do anything. They can't function. That's not the way to do things. And it is too bad that things have to happen for a lot of people to make moves when, you know, a coach like you and other coaches in the profession that really look at what's going on and are telling people these things, you know, talking to people that can make decisions, it falls on deaf ears. And, you know, I think that's another thing. We are a Sioux society. There's no doubt about it now. And I'd much rather see people take the precautions rather than wait for things to happen.
And I fully agree, but even look at it from our perspective. So we're in a lot of schools, we're in the military, we provide a strong certification system, but we're still an outsider. So you have to remember that you can teach this, you can give them the tools, but people in administrative roles like the hierarchy standpoint of it. So despite them even buying a service like we have and coming in, they can still elect as an athletic director, as a coach, say, well, we didn't have to do this. We're going to continue to do the same things that we used to do. It didn't hurt me that much. It's too bad now. Right. Instead of saying, even when I look back at a lot of our training, and despite having been fortunate enough to do pretty well, even though I was very poorly psychologically prepared, much of what we did in training wasn't correct. I mean, there was reasons why I tore my bicep tendon. I was told to do things that were incorrect. And I think you have to be smart when you're coaching other people. It's not as simple as saying, I'm going to make you do the same things I did because I was successful. I'm going to make you do the things that are best for you, that are going to get you through the process to be the best athlete you can and the safest athlete you can. And then post your athletic career, there's a compression of injuries and mortality to your body.
You know, Steve, too, you know, you and I have been doing this a long time. I I've always been a big fan of John Grimmick.
Yes.
Let's face it, in his 80s, still squatting like in the threes.
Yep.
Here's the deal. This to me is a lifelong thing. You know, I know a lot of friends of mine, you know, one got right to the combine of the NFL. He didn't make the team, but I mean, I give Fletcher all the credit in the world. I mean, to gotten that far and, you know, been acquainted with this guy, great stuff, you know, but a lot of these guys, even like him, they had like, I guess they looked at like one shot of glory. And never really looked down the road where I always did because I love lifting, all right? I love anything with physical culture. As you can tell, you and I have talked quite a bit over the years, and obviously we're sitting here today having a great conversation. But my whole primary point of everything, and I don't claim to know Jack, but I'm not bad at what I do, and I'm pretty good training people. But I want to do this the rest of my life, Steve. Unless, you know, unless God strikes me down dead after we talk, I hope I am John Grimmick.
Yes.
And you know something else? I don't want to die in a bed with a tube in me. You know, if I go down on a platform, I'd be happy as hell. Or if I'm out living in Iceland and I go over and sit in that goat pen and just sit in a chair and watch the stones and I just fall over like Corleone did in Godfather 3. You know what? I'd be mighty happy with that. And that's the whole reason we're doing these podcasts and we're into all this stuff and trying to help people. Because like you said in the beginning, it is all about giving back. And, you know, I enjoy this stuff. I mean, obviously this has been a big career change for me. I'm happier now with what I'm doing than I've ever been in my entire life.
And I can say the same for myself.
And see, you're very blessed, we both are, because how many people are I know that you've been doing a lot longer than me, but it's like I have a little recorder on my nightstand. I'll get ideas, it'll wake me up, and they're funny as hell to listen to the next day because you're half out of it. But I'm so enthused and inspired about this stuff. nothing feels better than having your feet hit the floor and get ready for another day. It's like you just can't get it off your mind. You just love it so much, and it blends in with everything I like to do. You know, now it's not working on computers. Now it's doing the business that's all shuttled in and brought into what's got me to where I am, and that's lifting weights. The discipline, the perseverance, the commitment, the connection now to people. We are connecting to so many people and getting so much great feedback from places as far as Germany now. It's incredible, man. And, you know, you've been there. You've done this with people. And the reason why I'm so happy doing this podcasting is we have a chance, like we did today, to get a massive message out. And this stuff helps people. And if they want to contact you or they contact me, whatever happens here, we are making a difference.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, and this outside of the normal strength and conditioning, The anti-concussion aspects just became something very close to my heart. It's part of the reason I got involved with the Sports Legacy Institute. And any way we can get information out and help, we're always trying to learn and further it forward. And then I would just suggest that anybody has a tremendous interest in this, we have an open group on Facebook called Anti-Concussion. I put as much as I can from all around the country and the world as far as studies are concerned. It's a great educational aspect. It doesn't cost you anything to join, and we would love more participation because the more people that have more experience, the more we learn.
Well, let's get it out as much as we can. You know, when you're on the show, we'll keep getting the message out about it because, you know, let's face it, this is a very important thing, and, you know, you're seeing more and more and more of this stuff, and it's like, you know, let's get some people on board here with Steve, and, you know, Steve knows what he's talking about, so let's get the information out there. Steve, why don't you are you all set? Are you?
Yeah, I appreciate it. I think it was a good amount of information. I mean, we can always take this stuff further in depth based on what people want.
Well, and not only that, I mean, you know, this is the first one of many, and you know, obviously you can expand on this, and there's plenty of other stuff I'm sure we can get into. I've got a million things on my mind I'd like to talk to you about. Before we sign off, why don't you give everybody all your information, where they can get a hold of you, what you're on social media-wise, and obviously the website.
So it's Steve Helmicki on LinkedIn, on Facebook, on Twitter, and then I would say that the company website is primordialstrengthsystems.com. If you're looking for the very specifics of the training, anticoncussion.com will be up, completely revamped soon. But the best aspects, I think, for contact and what's easiest is Facebook. So Primordial Strength Inc. on Facebook and Anti-Concussion, the group, and Primordial High Intensity Training, the group. And there's enough free information if you want to look at a close aspect of what we do. And the books are on Amazon.com and BarnesandNobles.com if you're looking for the manuals. And I once again thank you for an opportunity really to speak with you today. I'm sorry it took me so long to get up and running, but it's been a complete honor to be with you and anybody that's listening today.
Well, thanks, Steve, because it's been my honor too. I mean, very knowledgeable guy. You don't talk down to people, and anybody that's going to listen to this podcast, obviously, is going to be, like they're saying to me all the time, Steve, it's just like having us across the room from them and talking to them. And that, to me, is the biggest compliment because that means we're getting through. You know, people aren't feeling like these guys are so way out there, I can't even connect to them. And that's all I want to do. Steve, on your website, they have a way to contact you and everything, right? I just wanted to make sure.
Yes, sir.
They got
and anybody can call me at any time. I return calls as fast as possible. We have a busy practice. I do 35 appointments a day, but 716-213-8895. You can always get a hold of me if you wanted to have further discussion about any of this stuff, or if there's any way we can really help you. Like Eric said, it's really in some ways does not matter what we've done. That gives you an inroad to start something like this. It's more about what we can do for other people, and I try to do my best to help as many people as possible. That's what we're in this business for.
You got it. All right, well, before we sign off, I'm going to give you a little information. This is Motivation and Muscle, the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. And today we definitely did that. The brain definitely was connected up. So we are www.FiorelloBarbellCo.com. We're on Facebook at Fiorello Barbell, at Twitter at Fiorello Eric. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. So I tell everybody, Steve, you and I are going to be heard all over the world, which we are. You can get a hold of me at FiorelloBarbell@NICAP.RR.com. MotivationAndMuscle.com is up now. The website looks fabulous. Eric Grelou is our web guy. He is going to make a few more changes. It will all be set, and it should be functioning perfectly with what we want to do early next week. I think that's it. So, Steve, once again, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it, and I hope we can make this either weekly or whenever you've got time, because you are a wealth of knowledge, and I'm kind of partial to you anyways because you helped me out at one time. So you're always welcome on the show, and I'm glad that you were on today.
Thanks, and love the opportunity to do it weekly. You just let me know, sir, and have yourself a wonderful day, and take
so
care.
So before we hang up, I want to talk to you just for 1 minute. So for Steve Helmicki, this is Eric Fiorello. I want to thank you for listening to today's podcast. We'll be talking to you very soon, so you have a great week, and thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.